Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. We're back again and we're here for a few minutes, as we are every week, to help you out, to help out your cricket or to help out you helping others out if you happen to be a cricket coach. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here, and helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the director of cricket at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth. How's it going?
Yeah, good. Thank you very much. In the midst of lots of cup matches at the moment, so coming in thick and fast for all of our squads. So that's all good fun. Looking forward to the next couple of weeks of that.
Yeah, always good. And I noticed as well there was a bit of tape ball going on as well.
Yeah, always love a bit of tape ball. We had house cricket on Monday for the juniors, and tape ball's gone down brilliantly this year. I think it's a fantastic format for so many different types of players, whether you're starting off or whether you're experienced cricketers. They all seem to enjoy it.
Yeah, fantastic. Secondly, it's the head of cricket performance at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. How's it going?
Yeah, very well. Enjoying the glorious sunshine down here. We've got plenty going on cricket-wise, and all busy at the moment. But the end is in sight already, I think. We've probably got 3-4 weeks to go, and then it seems to be all over too soon.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with school cricket, isn't it? It sort of it draws to a close quicker than you would generally like. But there's still lots of cricket to go on after that, isn't there?
Oh yeah, all the guys then go away in their clubs and counties and things, and they've got lots to do, loads to keep them busy, and most of them are pretty full on with their cricket through to kind of end of August, start of September. So just because we don't see them day to day doesn't mean that they're not busy, and we're still in contact with a lot of them as they progress through the summer.
Yeah, it's interesting how it's a whole patchwork, isn't it, of links between clubs and schools and academy setups and private coaching and county setups, and there's so many different people involved with players now. It's there's always something to be getting on with.
Yeah, it's nice to have, like, for instance, with Pitch Vision, who've got a bit of software, haven't they, that can link all that up a little bit. So having a bit of open communication between the 2, 3, 4, 5 plus coaches that can be working with the same person or the same people at any time can be difficult sometimes, but having that having a line of communication of some sort between everyone's really, really useful.
Let's answer some questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show, or maybe readers to the Pitch Vision website at pitchvision.com. And how this works is we answer the questions that have been sent in, or the couple of questions that we pick anyway, and then we choose a winner of those two questions, which wins a prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if you want to send in a question for a future show, you can do that. You can email coach@pitchvision.com to get that across to us, or get us through social media, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. And the first person who sent in a question this week to be answered is Ian. And Ian says, "My team drops too many catches, even though we practice catching a lot. What can we do?"
Well, it's great that you're doing a lot of catch and practice. Volume normally has a very positive impact on a side's ability to catch. But probably what's not happening here is that they're not catching under any form of pressure or consequence. So, the catch that they're taking in matches is very different to the catches that they are building volume up. So how can we increase sort of pressure and consequence on the catcher? Well, one way of doing it is to split them up into teams, and for there to be a consequence of tidying kit away or doing laps of a ground or whatever the case may be, however you want to go about it, for the losing side, and then drawing lots out of a hat of who takes the catch. So maybe you've got a team that you do your 20 catches, and then against the other team it's a one player, one name out of a hat has to take a catch for each side. Whoever catches it, their team is safe for that round. Whoever drops it. If they drop it, then the other team have a consequence. And it just increases that sort of pressure on the catch, which is often what happens when the ball goes up in the air. You know, you think about that feeling when somebody pumps a ball up in the air for a high catch, for example, in a practice where you've already taken five or six, and then all of a sudden the ball goes up in the air. You feel fairly relaxed about it. You know, there's no real consequence about it. And then all of a sudden, the best player in the opposition hits a ball up in the air on a Saturday, and try and think about how your body would feel as you see that ball goes up in the air. And whether you're a brilliant catcher or you're not a brilliant catcher, there's going to be a difference between the two. So we need to try and replicate as best as possible. The other way of doing it is to overload, isn't it? You know, make somebody have a constraint on them, whether it be a physical constraint. So a way of doing that is to maybe do the machine gun drill, which features in, I think, in the fielding course that we did, David, where you increase the number of balls. So you're constantly hitting balls up in the air, and you've got to take 10 catches before you finish your round. As the lactate builds up, as your fatigue goes in, your vision starts to become a little bit impaired, but ultimately you're putting yourself under a bit of pressure. And if you can cling hold to 10 catches and on the bounce there, then you shouldn't have too many worries when the ball goes up in the air on a Saturday. Equally, you can do what England do with some of their fielders, which is to start them face down and the ball goes up in the air, so you've got to locate the ball first. You can get somebody standing behind a fielder just closing with their hands over their eyes so they can't see the ball. So you're cutting down one of your senses, which then increases the pressure of locating that ball, moving to that ball, and then catching that ball. So the overtraining method works. Volume normally does it. But you've got those couple of nice little tips there that might help you to add a little bit of 10% to your catch in matches, and they're pretty good fun as well.
One of the things I've noticed, Lavers, especially with club cricket, is that players tend to work on the catches that they feel most comfortable catching and are probably best at, and then don't really work as much on the other things. High catching is the one that I notice with our club. You know, they love taking the high catches, as many as they can, and you don't necessarily do as many catches which are, you know, in the ring or in the slips or close catching and that kind of thing. And yet, probably, you know, the ratio of catching practice to the number of catches that you take as a, you know, high catch on the boundary is a little bit out, I think. So maybe that's a suggestion there, that you can think about different ways to catch the ball rather than going, okay, well, we'll just add another 20 high catches onto the end of our training session. Maybe we'll go for some flatter ones or some lower ones or something a little bit more out of the box.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. I think you do see a lot of people training something that's within their comfort zone, and getting you outside your comfort zone is actually what's going to stretch you a little bit more and going to add that improvement. Something we try and do quite a lot is not necessarily really, really hard hit catches, but just catches that take you away from that feeling of comfort, and generally try and enforce a little bit of a state of panic, because a lot of the time, especially with younger cricketers, catch goes up and there's an element of panic, and the more they get comfortable with that and the more they can put themselves in a situation which maybe is a little bit different and isn't the perfect catching position, but they're having to take it anyway, the more they feel that actually something's achievable and it's easier to do. So we do lots of catching. Things like, but probably it's similar to Gara's here, but catch going up, and then you've got to put both hands on the hands of palms of the hands on the floor before you take a high catch. So effectively it's going to take your vision away from the ball. Similar thing, we do a kiss the ground catch where catch goes up, you've got to kiss the ground, then you've got to go up, relocate the ball, and then go and take the catch. So again, you're not going to be in the ideal position. Simple like rotational ones, so we'll do a 360 spin on a catch, so you've got to try and spin before you take the ball. Again, it's putting you off balance, it's putting you under pressure, or putting you into an environment which isn't as comfortable as you might like it. And ultimately that's what's going to happen. It's very rarely is it training the focusing on the easy thing, because the easy thing shouldn't be so much of a problem, but most catches I would think are slightly away from the ideal catching position. They're slightly away from the ideal location of the ball or body position or whatever it might be. So challenging that by forcing you to move into that ideal position or forcing you to take it while out of that ideal position, but still realising that the catch can be taken and it's not impossible, and you've done it before, and knowing that you feel comfortable doing it is what we do a fair amount of. And we've probably done that for a year or so, probably a couple of years now, and that seems to work quite well, and we're actually not seeing too many catches going down, which is really good to see.
Just while you were talking there, Lavers, I had a look at our stats for this year. We've had 44 chances for a catch this season in 50 over cricket. And of those 44, 15 of them were close catching. And 26 of them were in the infield. And obviously, infield ones may have gone up high as well. But that goes to show that there's not as many big high catches that go up as we practice. And I think, you know, if you leave players to their own devices, pretty much within about 5 minutes, they're doing whatever you ask them to do, they're doing high catches. So, you know.
If you think about the movement involved, a lot of people like a little bit of skill involvement, which is the catch, and a fairly low level physical involvement, which is kind of jogging across the ball, getting into position fairly comfortably. It's not a big physical exertion a lot of the time. It can be if you really challenge people, but a lot of the time, a lot of the ways it's done, usually it's not a big physical exertion, whereas that flattish catch or looping catch that requires a little 10 meter sprint left or right and then reset yourself and balance it and take the ball is a little bit more physically demanding, and it's probably a little bit more high tempo in terms of repeating and someone else going. And I think there's an element that you do want to retain that element of theatre in the catch, because that's what creates a bit of pressure as well. And Gareth talked about one person stepping forward from the team and everyone watching. And if you think about participation numbers, it's obviously very low, and some people would look at that as being not being productive. But the theatre it creates and the pressure it creates is a big chunk of what has the impact on success or failure. So I think that having that theatre at times as part of your catching practice is really valuable, it definitely puts people under a pressure that is hopefully similar to that they'll get in a game. Recreating the match exactly is very, very difficult to do, but I think that definitely is a step towards it.
Yeah, and there's a big performance element in all parts of training, really, isn't there? In terms of, when I say performance, I don't mean as in skill performance. I mean sort of, you know, performing, making it dramatic, making it exciting, making it interesting. That's a theme that you can run through a lot of cricket, to engage practice, to engage people, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I've told this story before, so stop me if I have. About three, four years ago, we had a weekend where on the Saturday we dropped 7 catches in one match, which would be pretty disappointing by anyone's standards, I'd have thought. So what we decided to do was, when it got to first team practice on the following Monday, everyone told everyone they had to take 7 catches. So everyone had to take 7 catches. They thought, oh, that's fairly easy. But what it was everyone had to take 7 catches, one after the other, in a line of all 11 players. And if anyone dropped a catch, then we were back to zero. And it so happened that we actually had the whole senior squad there at the time. So we had about 23, 24 people there taking one at a time. Obviously, at the start, I think it added up to about 150 catches with 22 of them, or with 23, 24 of them, or something like that. And at the start, it was all very laughy, jokey, and everyone's thinking this is very relaxed. But once you get past 50 and then you get past 100 and you've been there for 15, 20 minutes doing it as a group, and the one drop takes you back to zero, the pressure does really crank up. And one of the boys, who's a little bit overconfident, a little bit cocky, thought he'd try and show off and catch it with hands particularly low, down below his waist, and he spilt it, and he got hit by about 6 of the boys by a rugby tackle within seconds. So it definitely created the pressure, and subsequently it created a long evening.
Next question is from Paul. And this is more of a statement than a question, but definitely something to discuss. Paul says, in one day cricket, I think there are different jobs for seamers and for spinners. As a spinner, often you want the batter to attack you. The chance of taking wickets goes up massively. I always like bowling in tandem with fast bowlers who keep it tight. They bowl maidens and I take wickets. What do you think?
Well, I think that's perfect for you, Paul. I mean, because I'm sure in shorter format cricket, which is what you're probably playing most of, the more a batter comes at you, the more chances you've got of taking wickets. That sort of goes without saying, really. But I think it's not just the seam bowlers that can build up that that pressure, which gives you the ultimate opportunity to take more wickets. But it's also scoreboard pressure, isn't it, that does that. So you can, in fact, create your own pressure by having a very good idea of what your game plan is, which I'm sure you have. And equally, the other spinners in your team, even if they're part-time, if they've got a real clarity around what they're trying to bowl, to what field they're trying to bowl, then you can build up pressure, which then obviously will increase the chances of that rush of blood to the head for the batter and an opportunity coming your way with batter error, as much as it is from your skill and deception that you're putting on the ball as well. The other thing is, as we're seeing a lot of at the moment, is batting teams being so deep that the opposition know that they've got to go against a spinner, and it's been really interesting watching this tournament where 300 plus has become almost, well, in fact it is par, isn't it? It's what people are looking to try and achieve more often than not, and in some cases, you know, 300 and lots. And when you're looking at scoring at more than one a ball over the course of 50 overs, then the spinner, you're going to have to take the odd risk against spinners. So I think people know that now, and somebody like Adil Rashid has definitely benefited from playing in a side that looks at 300, whether they're setting or whether they're chasing 300 plus down, as being very achievable. He's gone up the world rankings as a result of being able to bowl his stuff and not being accountable for getting whacked about, and his role really is to get wickets, isn't it? So it's the ideal situation, but it's not always going to happen. You know, the games are played on different pitches and you might have to adjust a little bit, and it might be that, you know, if you're bowling a lower scoring game, a side might look to try and tick you over at three and over and not play attacking at you. Then what are you going to do? How are you going to create a wicket to help win the game for your team when people aren't taking those risks against you? But yeah, I agree with you. That's probably your ideal situation. But also, we've got to be ready for when that situation doesn't necessarily transpire.
I was going to say, Lavers, it's very important to play to your strength, but it's also important to know what the game plan is for the whole team, isn't it? If everyone is saying, right, you know, how we're going to do this is to bowl dots. And you've got one guy going, no, don't worry about that. I'm just going to bowl them out. Don't worry if I bowl a few half volleys in the meantime. Then you can, if that doesn't fit with the plan, you have to either make it fit with the plan or sort of follow the plan.
Yeah, there's always a hero, isn't there? There's always someone who wants to go out and be the person who's going to get the glory and wants to wrap it up quick and that group conversation and that group agreement on what's going to happen is vital, really. And ultimately, as Gareth said, it's probably going to change a little bit as to who's going to get that glory in the end. And it might be that there are conditions where the seamers are more suited to it, or it might be conditions where the spinner has to play a slightly different role and maybe be a bit more defensive, or maybe just try to do something other than allow the batters to go hard at him and ultimately pick up some wickets. But as long as there's that understanding and there's a carefully thought out plan of, in these conditions against this side, this is the way we're going to do it and this is your role, whether it is pitch up, swing, risk the boundary but take the edge every now and then, or it is sit in back of a length and try and pick up your dot balls as much as you can, or whatever it might be, then as long as it's agreed and people know what is being asked of them, then people can work towards that goal. And without that, it can be quite chaotic, because some people can almost change in their own head that I'm trying to bowl to defend here as a seamer, and then I get hit for a boundary, my third ball me over. Well, I'm not going to be able to defend this over. I might as well try and get him out and see if I can win it back like that. So yeah, just having a bit of consistency or a bit of agreed goal setting is vital, really. And once you get that working very, very effectively, then a fielding unit or a bowling unit can look really slick and really efficient and really control a game.
Yeah, and I've got another stat for you.
Stat us up, David.
Yeah, I've been looking at it, that exact thing this year. The idea of bowling dots. You know, the classic thing is, you know, if you bowl enough dots, then something will happen. You know, something will happen. I think it's the I think Michael Vaughan, I first heard this from in some commentary saying, you know, if you bowl two maidens in a row, something always happens. Which is turns out for us anyway that that is almost exactly correct, because what I did was I looked at the number of dots we bowled and looked at the number of opportunities that we had to take a wicket, whether that was either taking a wicket with a catch or dropping a catch, chances basically, and the number of dots that we need to bowl to create a chance is 12.39. So well done, Vaughan.
That's kind of fed off from Shane Warne's idea, isn't it? Shane, I think Gareth might correct me here. I think Shane Warne said 18 balls increases your chance of a wicket no end. So he always worked towards 18 balls in Test cricket.
Yeah.
And it would make sense that doing that in a slightly lesser number of deliveries in one day cricket would make sense. And again, it could be fed down to 2020 cricket as well. You'd imagine maybe five dot balls in a row in 2020 cricket or something like that would have a similar effect. So but these numbers are always going to be slightly different depending on the pitch conditions, the format that's being played. Like there's lots of variables coming into it. But if you can have something that you can work towards for yourself, and even if that number of 12.3 isn't going to be relevant on an away game, at least it might be 14, it might be 10. If they're working towards 12, then ultimately they're going to get themselves a little bit closer. It's not just a cut-off at 12.3. Eight dots has created some more pressure. Nine dots has created a little bit more. So it's not a straight cut-off at 12, because it's an average of a series of events. So as long as you're working towards it and you know how you're getting there, then you've got a pretty good chance of creating some pressure, and pressure equals mistakes, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's like any average or any stat. You know, you've got to use it as something to work from. There's no such thing as a hard and fast rule, is there? You can only look at what's happened before and try and predict what's going to happen in future, and then give yourself the best chance of doing that. But yeah, there's no stat which will ever give you the answer, the perfect answer, because people are people and cricket is cricket. And that is all we've got time for on the show this week. Before we go, there is one more thing we need to do, which is to decide on the winner of this week's competition. The online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com is up for grabs. And we had two questions vying for it. One is Ian's question about dropping catches, and the other one is Paul's question / comment about the different jobs for seamers and spinners in one day cricket. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Ian's question about how do we practice catching it. And, you know, I think we're getting better around the world of increasing that volume and people making better use of their practice time. Can we do it smarter than that? Can we introduce some of those drills that we talked about and have shown in some of the courses on Pitch Vision to make that time even more useful? And I think the answer to that is yes. We had a fielding performance last night in the National Cup where the England under 19 coach said that it was the best fielding performance he'd seen, and basically everything that went off went an inch off the ground or 2 inches off the ground, we ended up coming up with the ball. And whilst that was a fantastic performance that you can't always guarantee is going to be absolutely spot on, it sort of started with a number of these drills that just, you know, heightens the pressure, because a couple of those catches last night were off incredibly good players and were ultimately the reason why we ended up winning the game. So if you don't practice like that, then you're unlikely to be able to replicate that as often as you'd like in a match.
You might say catches win matches, Gareth.
You could say that, and you wouldn't be the first nor the last.
If there was anyone listening who wanted to get some more advice on some topic that's worrying them or making them think, Gareth, how could they get in touch with us and send in their question?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. You can also get us through various other methods. You can use the Pitch Vision system at pitchvision.com, the messaging system that we have there. And also, while you're there, you can listen to the bonus content that we have for this show. So make sure that you follow Pitch Vision Academy when you're messaging us from there. If you use Facebook, you can get us through Facebook on facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can do that by subscribing. It's free, and you can do that in any podcast app. Just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. Tap on the subscribe button. And if you want to get the old shows, get the old show notes, listen all the way back to the beginning if you want, then you can do that by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, guys.